We come to our last topic of the Zman Makas Medina. Nice way to cap off our discussion. Let me just give a little background. I think the most fruitful way to understand Makas Medina is that it's a modifier of the rules that we discussed until now, right? You could think of some rule is going to govern generally speaking, whether it's the Mazal Chagaram rule, whether it's the superior knowledge rule, whether it's the Mechira is a full transfer with the Ones burden rule. Makas Medina is going to be a modifier of one of those basic rules. I think that's just the best way to think of Makas Medina. It's striking, I think, that in the context of this sugya, it mostly seems to be a modifier of either a Mazal Chagorim rule or a modifier of the Sfina default rule. So it seems to interact with those two. We should keep our eyes open to see if it interacts with any of the rules beyond that. So let me just give a little background in our sugya. The Gemara Bamitzia here in Daf Kuf Gimel Amud Beis talks about the general rule for chachirus, meaning somebody who becomes a sharecropper on a field. And we'll see the way Rashi explains these sugyas. We're dealing with a specific kind of sharecropper, one who pays a fixed amount of produce as rent. So we're not talking about somebody who pays a percentage of the crop yield. We're dealing with a sharecropper who basically just pays a flat rent for leasing the karka, and he pays his rent in peiros, not in cash. So here's an example. Gemara Bamitzia Kuf Gimel Amud Beis. Hamekabel sada mechaver v'hi beis hashlochin o beis ha'ilan. You lease this field, and it's kind of a very special field. It has these nice trees, or it has a river. If one of those things gets destroyed, the river dries up, the tree gets chopped down, those are not grounds for getting a discount on your rent, unless it was clear that you specifically rented the field for these amenities. Right? Im amar lo chakorli sade beis ashlachim zu, o sade beis ilan ze, yave shamayin v'niktas ilan, then menakelo min chichuro. And Rashi says, because in the latter case, gully daite, de bishvil shu beis ashlachin tafila v'chacham imenu. So I guess if you were somehow very clear that the reason for renting this field is the special amenity that it had, if that amenity gets broken or whatnot, you get a little deduction in your rent. But if you didn't make that clear, as Rashi says, im kibla v'menu b'chakiras b'kach v'kach kuran l'shana, then even if those things get destroyed, you're not going to get a discount. You're kind of just stuck with the field as is. I think just one way of understanding that is as an implied tanai. If there's a tanai that you're leasing the field in order to benefit from these like specific amenities, you would get a discount if those amenities no longer are functional. So, you know, you'd rent a property with a pool in the back, and the pool doesn't work anymore, so you get some sort of discount if you made it clear that you want to rent a house with a pool, right? But if you just wanted to rent a house without specifying the pool, something like that, and the pool's broken, maybe you wouldn't get a discount. Adam?
Yeah, unlike in the pool case, there's an implicit relationship between these amenities and the shared crop and the planting. When you have a rice field, you need a source of water, otherwise it's pointless to have the rice field. If it's a field of apple trees, you're picking the apples, where if one of the trees goes down, then obviously you're just making less money off the bat.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. There is like a tighter connection between the amenities and the purpose of the lease in the Mishnah's case, right? Adam, that's your point?
Sorry?
That was your point, right?
That's basically the point, yeah. I sort of wonder if the Mishnah is being sensitive to that. Is it specifically talking about the case where those are the implications, or is it suggesting that's maybe irrelevant or specifically a different case?
Yeah. If you look at the Mishnah on Kuf Hei Amud Beis, here the Mishnah introduces the idea of Makas Medina. So it tells us that you lease a field and the crop gets destroyed. you know, some sort of grasshoppers come and destroy it, a storm comes and destroys the crops. So if it's a Makas Medina, which the Gemara defines as affecting all the fields in the neighborhood, then Minakelo Minchikuro, you get a discount on your lease. Im Eina Makas Medina, Ein Minakelo Minchikuro. If it's not a Makas Medina, then you still got to pay the full rent. Now, it's a little unclear why is the default rule that in the absence of a Makas Medina, you have to pay full rent, right? So I think just the straightforward answer is either this is just understood to be the nature of the relationship, or it's almost like a variation on the Mechira rule, that when you lease a property, Mechira Liyome is a kind of a memkar, it's like a sale, and so the acquirer, the purchaser, is the one who gets saddled with the loss of an onus, right? You know, I rent a property to use to make money. If I can't make money off subletting it or being productive in it, that's my loss to bear. It really has nothing to do with the landlord. So the Mishnah is a little silent on why the default rule is that the tenant gets stuck with the loss. Rashi here throws in the Amar Lo Mazal Chagaram. And again, I don't know if that's intended to be like a metaphysically loaded Mazal Chagaram, or it's just a way of saying, you're the tenant, you're the one who can't be productive, not my fault. So, you know, you're stuck with the loss. What's important for our limud is that Makas Medina now modifies that background rule. Absent Makas Medina, a tenant gets stuck with the loss, but with a Makas Medina, the Baal Habayis is the one who becomes saddled with it. Makas Medina hui minakelo min chikuro, suddenly the tenant gets a discount on his rent. Okay, anybody have thoughts on this? Just on the din so far, very straightforward din, Adam?
You know, I wonder if Rashi's Lashon Mazacho Garam here is being sensitive to be sort of dialectic between it being a overall lost Makas Medina versus only specifically you. Like, it's your fault. Mazacho Garam.
Yeah, like it's just, you're like clearly targeted because just you who were harmed, right?
Yeah, basically.
Good. It could be. Let me point out two important qualifications to this Makas Medina rule that come up already just in Rashi's discussion here in the Mishnah. So first is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that if you're paying your lease in dollar bills, not in fruit, not in produce, so this is also striking, right? According to Rabbi Yehuda, if you weren't paying in produce, and therefore there's like no connection between the Makas Medina and the way you were going to pay, you got to pay in full. As Rashi says, afilo himinak Makas Medina in menaka, she al hamos lo nigzera gzera. Hilkach lo aleha haisa puranazu. Really striking language. It sounds almost like the target of the ones language. If you're going to pay in cash, hey, your cash wasn't targeted by the ones. It's only if you were going to pay in produce and the produce wasn't produced, wasn't created by the field, then you would get a discount in Makas Medina. The second distinction here that's interesting, the second qualification of Makas Medina is Rashi's distinction between a chocher and a kablon. So just to clarify what those are, a chocher is somebody who pays a percentage. Sorry. The chocher in our context is somebody who pays a fixed amount of produce in rent. So he's automatically paying, let's say, $500 worth of fruit to lease the field per year. That's where we say Makas Medina applies. But if he's a kablanusa, meaning he pays a percentage of the crop yield to the landlord, meaning specifically tailored to the amount of yield that the crop has, that the field has every year, then Masha Yimtsu Yachloku. There's no deduction. You know, it's just the risk of a loss is already embedded in the original agreement. So if the crop yield is less this year for whatever reason, both partners, both the landlord and the tenant are going to share that evenly. And you'll just distribute the same percentage to the landlord, but obviously he'll get less if the field is unproductive. Okay. I just want to make one last point in the introduction here, this Mishnah, which is the main source for the idea of Makas Medina. The Meiri also uses language, he also uses language of Mazal Chagaram here. He says, "Im ein ze makas medina ein menakelo mechichuro, ela omer lo she ein ze ones ela mazal chagaram, mazalo garam." The landlord could say to the tenant, like, "Hey, this is not really an ones. It's your mazal, and so you're stuck with the loss." I just want to, but the language of the Meiri here is somewhat indicative. What do you guys think of that language that the Meiri uses? Ein ze ones ela mazalo garam. What do you think about the way he opposes the fact of this being an ones with the claim of mazalo garam? Did that strike you all as important?
Opposes or differentiates?
It sounds like he's saying that mazal. I think there are two ways we could have thought of mazal chagaram. One is that for sure this is an ones. We're just trying to figure out who the target of the ones is. The Meiri seems to be saying that if there's a target of the event, the hurricane targeted one party over the other, this is not even an ones. It's a targeted killing or something like that, right? This wasn't force majeure. This was intentional, directed act. I think the language here is pretty interesting. But in substance, it's the same as Rashi, that the absent Makas Medina, we say Mazalo Garam. And I think here I'm still open to saying that this is just a claim that the landlord can make. He could claim Mazalo Garam, and therefore he doesn't have to share in the loss, as opposed to Mazalo Garam itself being like some objective fact of the case. And Makas Medina modifies the mazel claim. Once there's a Makas Medina, it says that you can no longer assert that the other party's mazel was the cause, because we know that there was a universal cause for this affecting the entire Medina. Okay, any questions just on that background, short discussion?
Yeah, I don't understand the logic of this din at all.
The Makas Medina logic?
Yeah, I come to this chavura an ignorant man. More ignorant than usual. Can any of you hear me?
We lost you for a minute. We heard the important part about your coming to the chabur, an ignorant man, more ignorant than usual. Oh no, he's frozen. Cole? Doesn't sound like you hear his pulse being taken on, like, beeping in the background? Beep.
I think he's frozen in ignorance.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Oh, he's back. Cole, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Now, much better.
Great. I have no intuitions about this sugya. I have no idea what's going on here. If somebody asked me to give an account of why the dinim come out this way, I would look at them dumbly.
Yeah. Well, let's see.
That is what I have to say about this.
Right. Well, we'll try to get a better sense in Makas Medina in a moment. Gabe's gonna, you know, solve all our problems today. But what I just want to get on the table is the idea that Makas Medina is gonna modify one of the antecedent rules of risk or loss allocation by taking the burden off one party, whether it's the idea that, hey, it's your sfina that's not, you know, that it's your sfina that's in default, or whether it's the mazal chagaram, Macas Medina neutralizes those kinds of liability rules. But yeah, cool. Well, I think Gabe is going to make you much happier by the end of the Chabura. All
right.
Is that so, Gabe?
You both offered for me, but I hear your problem for me. So I guess I'm taking a step further than I would have done. Can you hear me?
We hear you. We hear you, Gabe.
Yeah.
Great. So I guess I was asked to talk about Rabashir for a second. So I'll summarize briefly.
Wait, so Gabe, do you want to do your summary right now?
With someone else. Yeah, or not.
Let's see. Gabe, why don't you give us your summary now, and then we'll... Let me make actually one other quick point, and then you'll give us your summary, Gabe, okay?
But I'll hopefully address some of those questions.
But... Okay. So why don't you, Gabe, so how about this? Gabe, give us your summary now, and then we'll do my analysis.
Okay, fine. So I think Ravashar does a nice overview of the Sigya. It's obviously cool to see the Sigya played out in the Halacha Lameisa. He's answering the question about daycares or schools, whether a parent who has contracted or agreed to send their child to daycare or school for a full year, and then schools are shut down by the government, whether they're required to continue paying tuition or to what extent they're obligated to tuition, which seems to sort of turn on all of our questions,
right,
and related to our studio.
That's just nice. That's the nice way we set up the limud here is that we kind of seen a lot of the rules, and then it's just a question: how do they get applied to these, single cases?
Exactly. Also, about it, it's important to note he's pretty clear that our case is a Makas Medina case. It follows Derek Ramshala. It affects Kulo. It affects everybody. There's no question as to whether the situation of the corona pandemic constitutes a Makas Medina. His discussion turns on the Maharam, which is brought down in the Ramah. The Ramah paskins that for the case of a Melamed who was decreed not to, or was following the government decree not to continue teaching Torah to the child he was employed to teach. The Maharam paskins that the Melamed is eligible for full star, the loss falls entirely with Baal Bayit, or it seems like the loss falls entirely with Baal Bayit. Ramah brings that down to Aha that Makas Medina, in the case of Makas Medina, the Poel wins out, the Baal Bayit carries the entire loss. The Sma then disagrees with that reading, first he disagrees with the reading of the Maharam, and he disagrees with the applications of the principles. He thinks that the Maharam is just saying some of the loss should go to the Baal Bayit, not all of the loss should go to the Baal Bayit. And he instead seems to say that the ruling should be that the loss is split across the Baal Bayit and the Poel. And the Sma actually, whatever, so I'll pause there. I think a lot of the discussion turns on something Itamar said, which is to what extent Makas Medina modifies our previous principles, or to what extent it's an application of our previous principles. I'm not sure what you meant by the word modifier, but so the Sma very beautifully argues, he says, well, in the case of Makas Medina, because we understand it to be something which universally falls upon the entire klal, which means that if we're locating onus, we either distribute it or locating klal, we distribute it equally to both parties, then, and if that's the principle used in adjudicating or assigning the loss, then we should assign it equally to both parties because they're both equally sort of at fault, or their mazal is equally at fault in causing this loss, which leads us to a nice 50-50 split. What's much harder to explain is through the Ramah's reading of the Maharam, which says the entire loss falls on the Baal Bayit, using our mazal principle. So sort of one way to say it is that, no, Makas Medina is sort of some kind of exceptional case. We scrap our own principles, we find new sets of principles, and that will lead us to pin the loss on the Baal Bayit. But I think Cole will not be satisfied with that explanation. Rav Asher tries to present two svaras to explain why we'd assign the full loss to the Baal Bayit.
One thing I would say is that, while you're right that you offer a nice explanation, assuming that everything turns on Mazal Chagaram or who's at fault. And then in Makas Medina, no one's at fault, no one's Mazal's Gorim, so split it evenly. Right? That's the intuitive force of what you're saying. But you don't really, but you still have the problem, and this is not your fault, about how to explain the Poel always losing rule, right? How, like the Poel is the Motzi, and so if he doesn't make a Tanai, he loses, right? Remember we saw that in the earlier Sugya Zechiras Poelim. It's not clear why that rule should suddenly be cast away in a Makas Medina situation. But yeah, either way, go on.
You're saying, because in those cases, we also leveled out the Mazel factor, and yet we sided with the Palais.
Right.
Yeah, so that's like a lighter version of the stronger question we'll have against the Ramaz reading of the Maharam. But yeah, I agree that question didn't come up. Rav Asher tried to offer two explanations for why the whole also followed the Palais. The first, neither was like totally satisfying, and both require a lot of explanation as the previous ago, which he doesn't do. But I'll just share them. So, I have some faith in Rav Asher. Just so that he's not a Yusuf Go, just rattle off.
Say that again. Say that last sentence again.
It's cool that he's like not learning. I don't know. But it's cool to encounter Tommy Desa Tommy who have these access to these Mikoro at their fingertips. It's impressive that he posts him at work. But Rav Asher says the first explanation is that sort of in some sense the locus of the onus in a Baalbayit Poel case is always going to be with the Baalbayit. That if we eliminated all sort of all other factors, at the end of the day, the person who's most impacted by a Makas Medina is going to be the Baalbayit. His children he wants taught, his field that he wants worked, and he's really the one who's at sort of the location, the sufferer of the loss. And so at its core, the loss should be allocated to Babai.
I don't hear that at all.
Yeah, I don't really hear that at all either. You won't hear the second, because that second are anymore. But yeah, what are you bothered by here?
No, it just seems arbitrary to say that Makas Medina affects Balabatim, the employers, more than the employees, right? I don't know what the factual evidence is for that. Gabe?
Well, if you think of the Maka as sort of, if we leave the economic world for a second and think about practical, real-world impact, right? When teaching isn't happening, right? Ina Finami, the Paul is no longer earning salary. But that's in the world of finances. But in the world of practical impact, the person who's really directly impacted is the Balabai, the person whose chefta is supposed to be sort of taught or worked, or right? They're the ones whose property is not being impacted positively.
Not sure. You guys have thoughts on that assumption? That he's saying that Rav Asher Weiss is claiming that whenever there's a magefa, it affects Balabatim more than it affects Poelim. I mean, if you read like the New York Times, right, they'll talk about how like usually the poor people are the ones who are more greatly affected by these kinds of pandemics than like people who are, you know, financially secure.
But they're being impacted in, whatever, sorry, the question I was supposed to before, but they're being impacted in trickle down impacts, right? Like they're being affected indirectly, not directly. So the person who's directly impacted is the person who, for whom the work was before.
What do you guys think? Donnie, do you buy that argument?
I'm kind of leaning towards what you were saying. It does seem kind of arbitrary, because I think it depends on like the socioeconomic factors of like of a society of like a society. So I don't know. I don't really buy that it would go the ball bias automatically. It would hurt the ball bias automatically.
Yeah. Yeah, Kira, what do you think? You buy your Harusa's defense of Ravasher?
I think it probably requires a little bit more. I mean, in the case of like in the prototypical case of Marcos Medina, we're dealing with fields, and the Maca is literally a disease that affects the field. Sort of does seem true. I feel like I still need a little bit more explanation of why Marcos Medina is distinct from non-Marcos Medina. This doesn't seem to be a factor that distinguishes Marcos Medina from something which is not Marcos Medina. But it does seem to hold water in the prototypical case offhand.
You're sympathetic in the typical case?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to make judgment on like general Marcos Medina, how it affects things, because we don't have such a good sense yet of what exactly the scope of Marcos Medina is.
Right. But it sounds like he's talking, or Vosh was talking about even just like a teacher, but like Cole has a request. I don't know if someone has a beeping thing in the background that says it's driving him crazy. Is that what you said, Cole?
Oh, so, yeah. Oh, I thought that was your AC unit.
I turned off my AC. For the public.
Yeah, somebody has some awful noise in the background. It's like oral Chinese water torture.
That could have been me. Is this better?
Yeah, what was that, Gabe? What was beeping?
I don't know. I asked if you could hear me, because I wasn't sure. I was trying out new headphones, but you said you could hear me.
No, we could hear you. It was like a beeping.
Now it's fine.
I think it was like static or something like that.
Anyway, I didn't mean to distract anybody.
Okay.
Sorry.
I just don't see why, you know, it's right to say that the parents who want their kids taught are more affected than the teachers who depend on the salary and employment. But fine, Gabe, let's grant that just for now, and let's see like argument number two. So is he trying to say that an Amakas, that's a reason why the Bala Bias should lose, because it targets the Bala Bias more? Is that the idea?
Yeah, that's the idea.
Yeah. It's kind of strange, if you ask me, because if anything, I would say the whole point of Amakas Medina is to say that no one's targeted more than the other. Like, the principle of Amakas Medina is to say that everyone's affected equally, and Ravasher is making this move to say, well, Amakas Medina is just a factual description, and in certain situations it actually does affect one party more than the other, right? Or maybe in most of the cases. Okay, fine.
Yeah, we've left the world of Mazel, and we've started thinking about whose loss it is to bear.
Yeah. Okay. Fine, that's theory number one. I don't think Cole is happy. Cole, are you happy with this, or it just sounds too...
I don't understand. Like... Maybe, like, I haven't heard any knockdown. Could somebody say something knockdown and persuasive? Like, could somebody persuade me of something? I'm like, you know, somebody wants, you know, people don't believe in God. It's not that they'll believe in nothing. It's that they'll believe in anything. Like, I'm ready to believe in anything about this, as long as it's persuasive. Just like, can somebody
give him,
like, Ravesh is great. Doesn't help. Like, give him, maybe, I don't know.
Throw the guy a life preserver. Gabe, come on.
Yeah, somebody say something grounded in the text. Somebody say something brilliant. That's all I want.
All right, Gabe, you have your second shot.
I've got to put myself on mute because I can't offer.
No, Gabe, what did you just try? Why don't you try? Try it again. I'm not seeing it.
First idea has plenty of flaws, so I'll share the second idea, which has probably even more flaws. He tries to argue that, generally speaking, Yad Tovah Aliyona is applied here, that we sort of, as a principle, we will always try and protect the Tovah. And he called Torah a socialist system, which I thought was a rather broad claim.
A socialist system?
It's not important. He doesn't know what he's talking about. It's not important.
But I thought that sort of flew into our entire history.
I'm
honest,
it falls to the
false.
I wasn't sure what to make of that.
It
didn't seem like a particularly good reading of any.
Right. That's the.
What did he mean by? So I think that this last claim is definitely interesting, even if it's not persuasive. You know, it's basically like what he's. It's like people say this about like Rawlsian, like distributive justice. Sorry, Cole. That's like
I just had a neck thing.
You're supposed to apply the difference principle to like every area of like law. So it's like when you formulate doctrines about tort law and doctrines about contract law, you have to make sure that the law is going to favor the least advantaged in society. And so like each law has to do that. And sounds like you're saying Russia Weiss is making some similar claim about the rules of Onsen, that he thinks they're, at least to explain this maram, they're designed to, they're basically designed to give the poel the better of the bargain. Is that the idea, Gabe?
Yeah, that's the idea. Which is an interesting idea if it's a
standard. Is that what he meant by socialism, as in like worker friendly? Is that what he meant by it?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, that's very little to do with social. I mean, but okay.
I threw that in because I thought it would make Cole unhappy.
I'll paraphrase somebody who said it in the other direction. It's a shtickel amaratza saber nishkeferlich. Yeah. I heard it going the other way, but all right, yes.
It's just pretty. That places the burden of Svara or explanation on the rest of the Sugya. It makes Makas Medina the standard case and every other case of Onsim as the exceptional cases, and then sort of put the burden of proof for explanation on everything else that we've learned.
Right, right. Yeah, okay, very interesting. Gabe, you have more to share, or that's the...
No, he like gets into Sakalaha, which is sort of very Lamaisa Nogaya for Itamar's driver case.
Yeah, but, the prepaying stuff.
And concludes that we should have some kind of shara.
Nice.
Oh, and then he gets into Paul Batel and how he evaluates Paul Batel, which was an interesting conversation, but not directly related.
Great. All right, Shkach, Gabe, for that summary. I don't think it made Cole's day.
No. There should be the same principle applied in these cases as with, you know, I see there's a distinction made within the Makas Medina cases about whether the plague is like local, you know, to this guy's fields or something like that. And I assume the Gemara is using that as a proxy, for like negligence. Like if this guy's fields in particular are being infested with locusts or whatever, so there's no relief.
Yeah.
I don't see why a general, I don't know why this should fall out any differently. Also, it's the worker analogy isn't a good one because this is a lessee, not...
Yeah. So let me talk. There's
a lessee.
Yeah, there are real problems. There are real problems in Shulchan Aruch about how Makas Medina seems to get applied very differently to rental properties and to employment cases, which is kind of what Cole's getting at right now. And Gabe, the cases you're discussing are all employment cases, right? They don't really discuss the.
So let me put it this way. Certainly, if Rav Asher's principle, if Rav Asher's view, which I guess is a priori sounds plausible, is that like the halacha looks out for the little guy, then it should be the employee that gets relief.
You would think the tenant here should be getting
relief.
And
the lessee should get relief.
Right, but the tenant.
It doesn't work out exactly that way. The employee is equated with the balabais.
Right, right.
So in most of the literature.
Halacha is only partially socialist then, you know.
yeah, whatever. Anyway,
yeah. So let me go on with my presentation here, and then Gabe will guide us back to, you know, the right course if we stray. But Gabe, thanks very much for the summary. So I just want to point out that the phrase Makas Medina is used a few cases in the Mishnayos and the Tosefta. I think in one place, so it's used really just to describe a set of facts, right? Not as a legal rule. Just bear that in mind. So the Tosefta, I think, in Bava Basra uses this really in just a factual way. It's talking about whether you have to inform a customer that the rain had fallen on the wine as it was being produced. And so the rule is that Kisham Hayardin Benagitos, if it rained, you know, between the vats where they press the wine, in Makas Medina he ain't sarach lo'odio, v'mein Makas Medina he sarach lo'odio. It's just like, you know, a duty to disclose. So the idea is that if, I guess, it rained all over the country and everybody knew that it was pouring and that all the wine was diluted, then you don't have to inform the customer. Because I think it's under the presumption that he already knows. But if it was just like, you know, a thunderstorm over your vat, then you have to disclose it because the customer doesn't know yet. So here I think Makas Medina is just used in a way of, you know, is this universal that affects everyone knows about it, or is it something that only you would know about it? The Mishnah uses the phrase Makas Medina again in Bava Kamma and Kuftes Zayin. This context is more illuminating. Here, somebody steals your field, and then it's taken away from the thief by the mob. Okay, so the Gemara says that if it's a Makas Medina, and the question is, does the thief who stole the field have liability for the mob taking it away? Does he have to compensate the original owner? So the Gemara says, if it's a Makas Medina, meaning everyone's field in the neighborhood was being destroyed, so you can't attribute the loss to the actions of the thief, right? Because even without his theft, the field still would have been destroyed. Omer lo harei shel chalafanecha, the thief could just say, here's your field, you know, go get it back from the mob. I had nothing to do with it, and he's excused from liability. Im machmas hagazlan, if, however, the field was taken and can be attributed to the original thievery of the ganav, or the gazlan, chayv lahamid lo sad acher, then the gazlan has a duty to replace your field. So here, and the Rambam's formulation, I think, is quite nice. The Rambam says, if it's a Makas Medina, then eino yochol lomar lo makazu ba biglal chata echa. The owner of the field can't say to the thief that this, you know, the onus happened because of what you did. V'harei ki'ilu ata hagorem lekach v'chayev l'shalim. And he can't say that you, Mr. Thief, are the cause of what happened. Elo omer lo harei shel chalafanecha. So what's striking about this case is that here Makas Medina seems to be about causation. Can the field owner turn to the gazlan and point to him as the cause of the loss that followed? What do you think? You think that use is consistent with how it's being used in our sugya? Arguably, we're trying to figure out, you know, which party is the cause of the onus, and in Makas Medina, then you can't really point to one party as the cause, whether it's a negligent cause, or as Kol was saying, or whether it's a mazal chagaram cause, etc. To my mind, these usages sound very similar. You guys have thoughts on that? Yeah, it sounds good, right? So I think that would be the cleanest way of understanding what Makas Medina is supposed to be doing. It's a factor to help us determine which party is the cause of the onus, either negligently or in terms of mazal chagaram.
It's not, but that's patently not what it is. Neither party, let's say an asteroid strikes from outer space.
Right.
Okay. So, as unlucky as either of our stars are, we're just doing the calculation about outer space. As unlucky as either of our stars are, neither of us is the cause of that asteroid's hitting our field, or the fields of everybody in our broad neighborhood. I mean, Mazal Chagarim, like, I'm charitably ignoring that phrase in the show, and it won't help us make sense of anything.
But take the canonical case where the field is destroyed by ravens.
There's a locust plague in the neighborhood.
Or the crows come and destroy the field. So we're trying to figure out, is this because of some negligent caretaking of the tenant? Or is this, something that would have happened no matter what he did? And so one metric is...
Let's say it would have happened. Let's say it happens to everybody. The Dinim don't come out the way we would.
Well, then it's a Makas Medina, right? If it happens to everybody, it's a Makas Medina. And we know that there's nothing specific to the tenant's caretaking that can explain it.
There's nothing specific to the Bala, but, like, why are we by... I guess, let me ask you this. So this is... Okay, so maybe we're getting to the fundamental issue. So Makas Medina is a good case because... Like, a full-fledged Makas Medina is a good case because it really is as far from everybody's fault as it could possibly be. It's totally non-local. But it disables anybody from doing their job. So why should the person... Now, this might be a let the loss lie where it falls type thing, because... And look, you could... let me explain what I mean. So the asteroid hits, the locusts hit, and the person who owes money no longer has to pay it. Or some Rishonim say you split it down the middle, fine. The point is the person who was going to be paying out gets some amount of relief. So I guess, like, in a sense you could say that's let the loss lie where it falls, but that guy had a contractual obligation. If it's some kind of partnership and and he was going to be paid and he was going to pay out, in a percentage of the produce, well, then he's not getting reprieve. He'll still pay a percentage of the produce. It's just the denominator is going to be much lower. But in a case where he was going to pay, $10 a month or whatever, it's a lease, whatever it is, let the loss lie where it falls. Who's bearing that loss? Like, I don't have good intuitions about that.
Right.
I happen to think the Bala Bias is bearing the loss, frankly, because they had a contract. The contract didn't implicit Tanai. You can always say that, but it's a last resort.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I mean, you might say that's what Rabbi Yehuda is getting at in the Mishnah when he says, if you're going to pay Ma'os, then Makas Medina wouldn't give you relief at all. It's only if you're paying... If you're paying produce that Makas Medina will give you some relief. We happen to not possibly like Rabbi Yehuda, but that would work consistent with what you're outlining. But let me spend a few minutes here discussing the Gemara on Kafei and Kufvav. And let me just tell you in the broad strokes what I think is important for us to take away from this sugya, because the sugya itself is not really important for us, the analysis of exactly how you define Makas Medina. But notice that the Gemara keeps getting at this question of Mazal Chagaram, and I think this is one of the few places where the Gemara itself is explicit about it. So look at some of these back and forths in the Gemara. In Kuf Hei Mabes, the Gemara says, Hechi Dami Makas Medina. So Rabbi Yehuda says it's if, most of the fields in the area are destroyed. Ula says it's, four fields in four directions. And the Gemara has a lot of sveikos, exactly, what happens if it's fields along a certain plowing line. There's one field that's not hit. It's all the wheat fields and not the barley fields. And the Gemara leaves all those questions b'teku. So the Gemara says there's some vagueness about how exactly to define Makas Medina. Then the Gemara gets into this mazal chagorem, finger pointing back and forth. So suppose the landlord tells the tenant, I want you to plant the field with wheat. But then the tenant goes and plants it with barley. And then all of the barley fields nearby get destroyed. So I guess it's a coincidence that all the fields nearby happen to be barley fields. Mi'arminan de amrale ilu zarase chiti havanami mishtatva. Can the tenant say, no matter what I would have planted it, it would have been destroyed? Can the landlord say, had you planted it wheat and not barley, then this field would not have been destroyed by the storm. And the Gemara actually says, Mistavra de Amarle, that had you planted it wheat, it would not have been destroyed. So this is kind of interesting, right? I mean, it almost sounds like there's a negligence claim. The point is that you're not protected by the Makas Medina if the tenant, if the landlord can make an argument that it was your actions that allowed the Makas Medina to affect this field. Okay? So I think this is really trying to figure out blame in some way, maybe in Cole's sense of negligent blame. Then the Gemara says, in the opposite way, the Gemara discusses this other case, Nishtatfu Kol Sadosav Shel Machgir. So let's say all the properties of the landlord got destroyed, right? So I don't know who the big, let's say Trump, just to use an example, an apolitical example, right? So there's a hurricane.
To pick a socialist.
There's a hurricane and all of Trump's casinos or all of his properties get destroyed. And amongst all of his properties that get destroyed is this property that he had a tenancy agreement, a sharecropping agreement with this tenant. Velo ishtadif ruba debaga, and the fields neighboring the Trump sharecropping field were not destroyed. So mi arminan kivin delo ishtadif ruba debaga lo menakile. Does the tenant get stuck having to pay since, strictly speaking, it's not a Makas Medina, right? I mean, the other fields neighboring this field were not destroyed. Odilma kivin deshtadif kule arasa matziyamale hai mishum letach didachu dehamishtadfu kol sadosecha. You know, could the tenant here, could the sharecropper turn to Trump and say, look, clearly this is a maka that was affecting your properties, so I shouldn't be on the hook at all. And the Gemara actually says that Trump would have a defense, the landlord would have a defense, and he would say, imishum lesoi didi have mishtair li purta. Kind of a strange thing. Points to a pasuk and says that in some cases, even when a maka is targeting all of one person's properties, oftentimes a little bit is left unscathed. Kind of a wild, it's a rule for, you know, targeted onsen, that you should know, like, if all your property is burnt down, then maybe you're not being targeted because, you know, if God's angry at you, he leaves a little bit untouched. And then Gemara asks the question the opposite way. Nishtadfu kol sadosav shel chocher. Suppose all of the fields that the sharecropper leased got destroyed, and all the fields in the neighboring area of this field also were destroyed. So do we say, since the fields neighboring this one were also destroyed, it's a Makas Medina and you get a discount? Or could the landlord say, you don't get a discount because, Mr. Tenant, all of your fields were destroyed? And the Gemara ends up saying that actually the tenant does not get a discount because it's evident from the fact that all of his fields got destroyed that he was being targeted. You know, the Rishonim are a little troubled. Why does the logic of, you know, if God were targeting me, he would have left a little bit unscathed, not apply to the tenant also? But what I want to take away from this is that the Gemara keeps appealing to these claims of Mishum Lesach Didach or Lesachu. As Rashi says, Lesach is Mazalcha, right? Meaning it's like something associated with you that caused this. And I just think it's very indicative that the back and forth in the Gemara about Makas Medina is framed by determining, is it a Makas Medina or is it specifically a cause associated with one party? As Rashi said, the mazel of one party. And so that leads me to believe that at least in this sugya, the thing that Makas Medina is doing is that it's shifting away fault or blame or mazel association from one party and putting it back into, you know, the equal field of both of them. And, you know, Cole's point is, I accept Cole's point really well. If it's really in both fields, why, you know, is it just some complicated leave the loss where it flies issue? I think maybe, or maybe you fall back to one of the earlier rules that we saw leading up to this discussion. But the point is that Macas Medina is an attenuator of one person's fault or one person's mazel. Okay. Good. And you could, I don't want to get too deep in the mazel back and forth things, but that's what I want to take out of that short discussion. There's one other Gemara that I want to call to your attention. The Gemara on Kuf Vav Amud Beis. The Gemara tells another Makas Medina application. This is important for just how we define Makas Medina. We saw this a little bit in the Machane Ephraim. Rabbi Huda Omer, im kibla mimenu bimos. Remember that if you're paying your rent with cash, you don't get a Makas Medina discount. He says, tells the following, Hu gavra de kabil ara le mizre behu, tome aguda dinar dinahar malka saba bezuzi. So there's a certain guy who paid cash to rent or to lease a field right off of the river Malka Saba. And then that river was diverted or dried up. And so he couldn't field the field that was sitting on the river. Also, Lakame de Rava, the tenant came to Rava, Amarle and Rava Paskin, Nahar Malka Saba lo abedemiskar, Makas Medina hi. This is a Makas Medina. It's a very unusual event. Zil Nachile. You get a discount in having to pay him. So you could see the Gemara here applies the Makas Medina discount to the tenant and says that he doesn't have to pay the full rent when a Makas Medina causes the river to dry up. Good. Now I want to move to, I mean, that's really the extent of what you get from the Makas Medina and the Rishonim. Gabe, you wanted to pipe in?
Just a quick question. Is the definition of Lo Avid Demiskar accepted as a factor in evaluating Makas Medina?
Yeah, really good question. I think it's not relevant to Makas Medina, actually. Because, right, I think that line in the Gemara is separate from the next line. It would be weird if lo avid demiskar were the definition, right? An unusual event is not what makes something a Makas Medina. What makes something a Makas Medina is the scope of who it affects, right? So I just thought this is interesting. Yeah, so I think the way the Rishonim understands, look at Rashi, for example, Makas Medina. It's Makas Medina lo olav levado avra. That's why it's a Makas Medina, because it didn't just affect him. It affected anybody with a field in that area. Vila suke adaite nami lo havale, de lo hava avid lemistaker. And you might have thought that the separate rule of loss allocation, remember a different rule that we saw earlier in the year, is that which party should have foreseen it, right? And so if it was something that he was expected to foresee, then he would bear the loss in any event. So you need two things to obtain to be exempt from payment. You need A, that it's a Makas Medina, and B, that it wasn't something that you were expected to foresee. So Gabe, you know, it's a very interesting diuk here that Rava mentions both of these things. And it does raise the important question, and it even suggests that if it was something you were supposed to foresee, then you would not be pottered by Makas Medina, right? So it tells us a little bit about how the foreseeability rule interacts with the Makas Medina rule. Right, Gabe? Is that right?
Yeah, that'll get us into a political discussion about the pandemic.
About the what?
About the coronavirus pandemic.
Meaning
the territory.
Meaning if you're supposed
what
to.
What should have been foreseen?
Right, should have been foreseen. Right. Yeah. Exactly. I'll just point out also that the. Second. Yeah. There's interesting. There's a strange rivet here, but I don't want to get bogged down in this discussion right now. But maybe we'll come back to it in our next two chaburas. Let me speak now about the important cases in the Rishonim. You see, the Gemara doesn't really have much on Makas Medina. It's really this one discussion in a tucked away case of sharecroppers, and you know the Gemara is not explicit about exactly how Makas Medina interacts with these other rules. It only tells us how it interacts with the rule of, you know, Mazal Chagaram. But if you look here at the Rishonim, you get three interesting discussions and some important extensions of the idea. And this is really where the literature in the Shulchan Aruch is built around. And Gabe spoke about this first case of the Mordechai in Remez Shin Mem Gimel here. So this Mordechai, I believe, is the first to extend Makas Medina. It's really exciting, the Marami Rutenberg, to extend Makas Medina to the case of Poalim. Right, so far it only applied to the case of rental properties. And he discusses the following. All these are cases of Milamed Achozerbo, etc., etc., prepayments. Is teaching a Devar Aved who? And then he says the following. V'im habitul shel hamilamed machmas gzeras hamoshel shebeir. So if the reason why the malamed is unable to teach is because of a gzera, right, a ruling of the governor, right, or the person in charge, and therefore, v'ef shar lemelamed lilmod, have makas medina, v'yehe hahefsid shel balabayis. That this is coming off this Rabbeinu Meir here, the Maram. So this is the psak of the Maram where he says that if it's not a makas medina, then obviously the poel wouldn't be paid for the part that he didn't do, be considered a poel achozer bo. But if it's a makas medina, then the poel gets paid everything. Okay? Here's the default. The default was malamed achozer bo, murd balabayas, ein rotzog malach, yad balabayas val yona, socher lava mateyo. I guess because it's a davar ha'aved. But makas medina, and you can see here, Meir Omer, the halacha lamaisa the davar ha'aved hu. If the Malamed backs out. But if the Malamed backs out, if the Malamed's not backing out, but there's an objective gzera for the Malamed not being able to teach, that constitutes a Makas Medina. I think what Makas Medina is doing here is saying that we don't view this as the Malamed backing out. It's not the Malamed breaching or the Malamed being in default. Rather, it's some external circumstance which makes it impossible for him to teach. V'yehei ha-hefzid shel balabayas. Now, I think Gabe pointed out that there are different ways of reading this tshuva. If you just have this language in front of you, how do you read it? What do you think he's saying? What does that mean, v'yehei ha-hefzid shel balabayas? What do you guys think? We have Yakir. Yakir, are you here? Or if Yakir's here?
I'm here. I just have to go grab a reel.
Oh, okay. Sure. Go. Grab him. Carefully. Donnie, what do you think? What do you think this means that we have such a balabias?
I'm not really sure what you're asking for.
What do you think the words mean? Which have said?
Well, just simply, it just means that it seems like that it's a complete loss for the ball. I don't know if I should use the word complete, but loss for the ball about it.
Yeah, so what does that mean, complete loss, right? So you could read complete loss as meaning that he has to pay out the whole contract. Mm-hmm. The words here don't really imply that. Right, just means the balabayas gets stuck with the loss. What loss, right? So one way to read it is to say pay out the full contract, which is how Gabe was interpreting it before. The other way of interpreting it is just to say that, I guess, if he has greater expenses in hiring somebody else, that's just the balabayas is lost to bear, but not that he has to pay out. Remember, we were talking about davar aved. Davar aved is usually... is if davar aved is that you're going to suffer some sort of loss by not having the teacher, right? So could you charge the teacher for backing out? Remember, the first line is melamed achozer bo, yad balabayis al hel yona, socher alav o matehu. And maybe we're just saying that in makas medina you can't do that, right? It's not clear that Mordechai wants to commit himself to saying that you're able to, the Malamid's able to get paid in full for the job he didn't do. So I think that's really Machlokas Rishonim how to interpret this Mordechai. Do you see that, Donnie, or no?
How would he be able, like, what are the other expenses in that other scenario? Like, how is he getting another teacher if they were there at Ma?
Yeah. So you could just imagine that it's the, right. So just imagine that the Malamed, it was a Gezerah against the Malamed. Like, this particular Malamed was kicked out of town. He doesn't say, the Mordechai doesn't say that no one was allowed to teach in the city. It wasn't like at the Yevanim where, you know, they decreed that Torah learning was also. He just says, Im habitul shel Malamed, e'ef shar le'Malamed l'ilmod. Right, and therefore this Malamed can't teach.
Wouldn't the Baal Bais be able to say Mazlo Garam, that like why is the Malchus like putting a hit on you or whatever it is causing that?
Well, I don't know, it's interesting. We haven't really seen Mazlo Garam in Schiras Poalim.
I was understanding this case as it was just a more of like what you're saying, the Yevanim case.
And then you're saying if it's a Yevanim case, the only kind of hefsid that's available here is hefsid of paying out the full contract. Because there's no rehiring someone else, right?
Yeah, because that's not how I was understanding it. It's not a possibility.
Yeah. It's interesting. Do you see the possibility of reading it my way, or?
I just don't understand. How would that be considered Makas Medina if we've been defining Makas Medina as, like, it's affecting everyone?
Right. As opposed to, like, interesting. You're saying even just the use of this phrase here suggests that no Milamed is able to teach.
I haven't seen where the Mordechai, like, talks about Mazlo Garim, like, for Makas Medina, but, like, I'd assume if he's taking everyone else's understanding of it, then
yeah, it's interesting.
It can't apply to just one individual.
Yeah. Look at the way the Shulchan Aruch quotes it over here, citing the Mordechai. This is the Ramah citing the Mordechai in Shin Chaf Aleph. V'chein pasak maram al melamed shegazar hamoshel shelo yilmod. Here it actually sounds more of, you know, that to have a makas medina. I wonder even if you could interpret this as makas medina in the sense that not that its scope is that it applies to everyone, but in the sense that it's coming from a neutral third party onus, right? It's not like, you know, Donnie just, you know, as say, you can't say it's not his fault or anyway. It's that the Moshel did something arbitrary and capricious by saying that you can't teach. And then v'chol ha-hefsid al baal ha-bayis.
I see it a little more there, but I still don't understand how that would work. Like, it just doesn't seem like that's how we've been defining Makas Medina at all. Like, because it seems like all these other, like, onsim cases of Makas Medina have been third parties also, but if it's about the individual, then it's not Makas Medina anymore.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's a fair point. It's a fair point. So you're saying the best way to read this is the way the later Achronim read it, is to say that in Makas Medina, you got to pay out full to the Poel. I would say that, you know, even if you accept that reading, one way just to make sense of it, I think, without going into Rav Asher Weiss's territory, is just to say simply that if you view the employment contract as a haknas haguf, then it makes sense to say that once you hire the person and you sign the agreement, there's a transfer of right, right? So the Baal HaBayis owns the labor of the Poel. The Poel sold his labor up front. And if there's some onus that prevents him from having to work, then he gets to keep it anyway, just because that's the nature of Schiras Poalim. It's like a haknas haguf, like an upfront sale. And yes, there are some talk cases where the poll has to disgorge that, but not when it's an onus of Macas Medina, where it's like not his fault at all. So I think that's just like an easier way, Gabe, of explaining this ruling without having to say that halacha is necessarily, you know, pro-workers, or without saying that the onus here affects the Baal HaBayis more than the poel. What do you think, Gabe?
Yeah, it definitely feels easier and a little bit more precise.
Yeah, notice also it goes, he says, Chaim Pasak Maram. Maram is one of the Maram in Rundberg is one of the early figures that we saw who was a Poel Gufo Konoi person, which fits in nicely with thinking that it's an upfront sale. So I think the point here is that it's not Makas Medina that's doing magical work here in this case. It's really Makas Medina just saying that they're... the poel is not really chozer, and it's not the poel's fault. So there's no reason why he should forfeit what he's entitled to. That's just something. And if you look at the Mordechai in context, you'll see that the Mordechai is really just opposing this with cases of melamed chozer bo. So the idea is that chozer bo machmas makas medina is not really chazara. That would be the argument.
The sending voice in the acronym doesn't read it the way you do. The Sma's reading is sort of in the middle. He just tries to be emphatic that it's not the entire loss which is being assigned to the Baal HaBayis, but part of the loss.
Yeah, via hey ha hefset. I guess some of the loss will be on the Baal HaBayis. Like, yeah, we'll see that. That's consistent with the way the Ravan reads some of the sigyas. So we'll talk about some of the achronim on this in the next two chaburas. Okay, the next important tshuva is also from the Talmid and the Rami Rotenberg. So he calls. Today is quasi history of Halacha Day, so okay. Look, Cole's in such a bad mood because this is like not—he's not being persuaded here, right, Cole?
Yeah, I see nothing to any of this. I mean, I'm so open to being persuaded. Well, all I want is a nice first cut theory. I don't think that's too much to ask.
That's right. All right.
I try to come up with three Chidushei Torah before breakfast.
Yeah. Let's look at this. Tshuvas Maimonios and Mishpatim Simen Chav Zayin. Notice who this comes. This is really a tshuva of Reb Shimshon Bar Avram, Rosh Mishans. Big deal. Nice to have tshuvas the Rosh Mishans. So here, this case is cited in all the contemporary discussions of Makas Medina, as is that Mordechai and Ramah. This is also cited in the Ramah, actually. And he says the following. Case of Reb Mordechai Bar Eliezer, who rented a house from a landlord, Meisha Achas. See that? Women were doing business all there in the medieval Ashkenaz. Okay. V'hiktim la'dala dinarim. He paid her in advance for dinarim, and the house burnt down within 8 days. Okay. And now he wants his money back. And she says that she already spent some of the money, etc., etc. Okay. So this is basically a case of prepayment and the house burning down. Now, the Rosh Mishan starts off by analyzing this case against the backdrop of the Svina case, the boat case, right? Who's considered to be in default? And if you just look at this case, who do you think is in default? We just looked at it. House burns down. Who's in default? Gabe, house burns down. Who's in default?
Oscar. No, the
software
gives you the
kid in
on the bias.
Well, let's see. So he says, he starts off, so he starts off by saying, that you would think that this is kind of analogous to the boat case, which party is in breach, et cetera, et cetera. But then he ends up saying that there's, like we saw in the Tshuva Sar Rashba, that Schiros is Mechira Liome, right? Mistavra filoha kol chayv l'shale masocher, divirshuso nafal, dechol yime Schiros habayas birshuso. Right, so when you lease a property, it's your property for the interim, so you are stuck with the loss as the tenant. Okay, vafilu lo nasan lama lo yitain. And he should have to pay up whatever he didn't, even for the time that he wasn't able to use it. But then he turns around and he says, let's walk away from the schirus as a mechira rule. And he says, he introduces a new fact into the case. See, it's kind of annoying that he didn't tell us initially that the whole city burnt down. He says, miyuhacha kivin denisr fahair havale makas medina. And he cites the Makas Medina rule from the Mishnah in Perek HaMikava that we just saw. Menakelo min chichura. So what do you think? What's the structure of his analysis? That the default rule should, without Makas Medina, would be the socher loses. The socher's got to pay up. But that rule is modified or overridden by Makas Medina, which says that at least he gets some sort of either partial discount or full discount and doesn't have to pay. Meaning, and notice, by the way, he also translates the ownership rule in terms of mazel. So I think you could just read this whole tshuva as saying, look, if you're the owner, if you're the lessor, you're considered to be the owner. As the owner, you bear all the losses because, they accrue to you. Unless it's a Makas Medina, in which case we don't view the onus as targeting the Mechira Liyome owner. And therefore, you would get some sort of discount or full relief from rent because it's a Makas Medina. What do you guys think of that tshuva of the Rosh Mishnas? Pretty clear or problematic? Don't everyone scream out at once. Anybody have thoughts on that? Tshuva?
Hey, Tamar, go back up and leave it there, would you, please?
Yeah.
Wait, so he's saying here, Mistamar Vila Kolchai of Lashel Masocher, the Bishusa Nafal, the Golimes Hiris Habais Bishusa, that argues against relief.
Right.
Vafila Nanasa Lama Leitain.
Meaning you'd have to pay because you're the
what's the thought here? I'd like a thought. What's the thought here?
The thought here is that absent Makas Medina, we'd say that it's mazalo de sachir gorem, right?
Right. Okay. Is it? I mean, that's not a good... can I ask you, Itamar, can I ask you a question as a friend?
Sure.
Do you find any of these remotely persuasive?
It's not my job to...
Can you spoil... No, don't give me that. Can you spoil this for us? What's the chiddush you have? You know when Rav Shurkin used to show up to the Rav Shir? And the Rav would, he would do the Rav Chaim thing, this, you, that, and Rav Shurkin would be sitting there like, what's the chiddush? I'm Rav Shurkin in this situation. Like, what am I missing here? Right. Where's the bandit in the woodpile? This is not...
Well, I think what I like about this tshuva is just the way he's clearly using Makas Medina to override the rule that would otherwise be applied, right? He's saying standard rule. Oh, why? I think because
it's not Maslow Gara. So
yeah, there's no reason. There's no reason, right? There's no reason to attribute the onus specifically to one party in such a case. Now,
I don't even know what the attribution. I mean, can I ask you a question? When people say Maslow Garam, are they? I don't mean this in a bad sense. Are they engaged in a form of victim blaming? I mean that neutrally. They're saying like, ah, you know, it's like you weren't negligent, but you know, it's if it weren't for, they're basically saying if it weren't for you, okay, you know, we wouldn't have gotten into this mess. Or something like that. It's a form of like non-culpable liability assignment.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I think you could still. There's still a way. It's hard to put yourself in the mind of so many different Rishonim who are looking at this from, you know, with so many different background assumptions. But you know, I'm open to the possibility of still viewing Mazelcha Garam as leaving the onus where it falls, just with the view that Makas Medina is where the onus falls on everybody equally, right? It's like, think of it this way, right? So in most cases, the onus hits someone in particular, unless it's a Makas Medina and it's hitting everyone. It's like, it's falling in everyone's backyard at the same time.
I don't even see why it's hitting somebody, being the target of own it, like, again, unless it's being used as a proxy for negligence, which I assume it is in these, like, that's the charitable read of these cases. Like, why is being the, if it's a principle, if it's a conservative principle, let the law fly where it falls, then I understand. But I don't know why being the object of a plague should legally involve liability for the losses as a result of the plague. Again, unless we're just being, you know, unless it's just, you know, the inertia of the thing and, you know, the bad luck, right? Okay, Maslow Gara, maybe that's what that means. But anyway.
Yeah.
I'll stop kvetching. And,
Adam, you want to solve Cole's problems?
I'll stop kvetching and do the math.
No, not whatsoever. This just made me think about something directly interesting about one with the Sassi Maka Medina. You can always define where the locus is, especially in the case of a fire.
What did he say?
Locust. Locust with a T or without the T?
Without the T.
Oh, locust. Locust.
I feel like you say the locust or the locust, but in the case of a fire, the fire happened somewhere.
Unless the whole town burned down.
You needed the whole town to burn down, or is it not enough in the case of a fire that the fire did not take place or did not begin in the house that you were renting? Versus a case of locust, where you might have the issue of, yes, they just descend upon the town.
Yeah. I mean, there are different ways of, like, defining. I think different natural events will trigger different rules of pinpointing the onus. Right? Adam, is that the suggestion?
Yeah. I mean, that makes me just find it a little more problematic to apply it in this case.
Because the fire? Well, you know, I don't know. Maybe the fire came from, you know, the fire came from the other side of Lisbon before it hit your house along the river. What's that, Cole?
Why do we go to Lisbon?
Lisbon burned down.
Watch Casablanca?
Is Casablanca in Lisbon?
No, but that's where they're trying to get. That's where you get the flight from Casablanca to.
Oh, yeah. You gotta cross the Straits of Gibraltar and...
Yep. Ravino Fanano? Did I get that right?
Yeah, Ravino Fanano. Very good. Yeah, cool. Nice. Okay, let me get one other tshuva in here.
On 1.8 previously?
Yeah.
When you were talking about the Makas Medina sort of upending the classical rules, the rules we would have applied, you're noting that they're, I mentioned this earlier, that there are two ways to think about Makas Medina, either as an extension of previous principles or a departure from previous principles.
Yeah.
So the one is in the departure camp, which will have to lead us to some kind of explanation of which won't satisfy Cole, but will just maybe pacify Cole. which is that, like, the Makas Medina somehow undermines the entire basis of the contract. If Agos Mamonios thinks that Schirus is really a form of temporary kinyan, the bias is in the Socher's property, in order to argue that the loss still falls in the masker, you need to sort of get rid of the contract entirely in some way or another.
Yeah, see, Cole, I like, I mean, sorry, Gabe, I like that suggestion. Gabe, let me just, I'll just reformulate it and then you'll just confirm this, what you're saying. What Gabe's suggesting is that maybe Makas Medina is more of like a, it's such a background event that, you know, shifts the basis of how business is done or something like that, right? It shifts like the whole background operation of society, that this is like really like undermining whatever agreement there is, right? As opposed to like a local onus, which is something that, you know, one party or another should have thought of or get stuck with, something like that, Gabe, right? I think that's an interesting suggestion. You know, it's almost goes back to that language of the Gemara that you pointed out before, Gabe. If you read like Lo Havale, like what is like Mosadol Shchiach or something? What was the language of the Gemara?
Lo Avid Listaker.
Yeah, it's like Lo Avid Listaker. This is such an unusual kind of thing that it constitutes a Makas Medina. And Gabe, I think that speaks a little bit to your point that Makas Medina is not just about the scope of the onus, but like the quality of the onus. It's just like a super onus, and super onsim have different rules. Is that the, that's the, I think that's the idea you're getting at. Yeah?
Yeah.
Cole, does that do anything for you, or? Kacha, kacha. But I do like the suggestion, Gabe, and, you know, that is kind of, I think that would be another interesting way of another route to explore the significance of Makas Medina. The reason why I resisted is because you might think an onus is an onus, right? I mean, like, who cares how big it is? Who cares? You might think it's just in the nature of an onus that it's the kind of thing that's unforeseen. But let me think more about your suggestion. And we'll see if it crops up in any of the later post-game. Let's get that. I want to get this last tshuva out. Not this tshuva simonios. See, this is an interesting tshuva. We'll talk about it a little bit next time. He does not talk about Makas Medina in this case. The Ravan in Simen Sadi Ches is the, probably as one of the most important discussions of Makas Medina in an actual case. Let's take a look at this tshuva here. Leish kelibi krovi ahuvi or belazer berb shimshin. Ani eliezer meshev al esek ruvein. Shesachar bayis mishim on l'shtei shanim. Vehiktim v'nasan lo aschar shal beis shanim. So Ruvein rented a house from Shimon for 2 years, and he paid it all in advance. Now, uvesoch osan beis shanim, barchu hayehudim min ha'ir, mipnei pachad nafsham, ubarach gam hu v'hiniach habayis reikam. So you can see everybody in town fled because they were afraid of some persecution. V'yachar kach chazru hayehudim v'gam hu, v'rotze sheyishalim lo shimon masha haya chutz mi beiso, Shimon Meshiv Basi Hayofanecha Vata Chocharto Veini Mashalim Lacha. So everybody in town fled. There was some, I guess, crusade or whatever. And Reuven fled as well. He wasn't able to use the home for some of those years. Now he wants either an extension on his lease, or he wants to be reimbursed for the time that he couldn't live there. And Shimon says, hey, my house was perfectly habitable. You ran away, and so you basically just didn't use it. Really a great case and a very nice setup by Ravan, right? So how would you adjudicate this, right? Just from the principles of the Sfina case, and you could see, by the way, the Shoel raised the Sfina case principles. Masha hevesa me'asocher es ha-Sfina v'tavala b'chatzi aderech, right? About one party being in default. So how does the Ravan go ahead and analyze this? Here's what he says. It says, Nir Bein Ay Tainas Ruvein Taina Gemura Lefi Shemakas Medinahu. Reuven's entitled to get relief from his rent because this was a Makas Medina. It wasn't as if he just abandoned the property. The whole area was affected. Quotes the Gemara in the end of Bamitzia. He says the prepayment doesn't matter when it comes to Makas Medina. It's interesting. Loshna Hikdin Veloshna and Loshna Lo Hikdin, the Kivan the Dina Hachi, Mali Hikdin, Mali Lo Hikdin. But then he says that really Reuven should get a discount because this is a Makas Medina. But then he has this Chiddush that Gabe mentioned. Umiyu minake min chikuro katani velo kol chikuro. De kivan de makas medina hi al shneem hava hafsid. Vize yafsid mechza, vize yafsid mechza. Hachanami shimon yashlim la ruven maftis hayamim shayo chusmi beso. Veruven yafsid hamutar. So I think this is really a fantastic shita. And Cole, this should be the something that makes you happy finally. The Ravan reads the Gemara as saying menakelam and chikuro, as saying not just that you get some, you don't get full relief in a makas medina, but it means that whatever losses there are should be split evenly between the tenant and the landlord. So I think that what's that?
I saw the Ravan. It's a good, I don't know much of a theme. Yeah, no, I guess it does make sense. I guess the loss falls equally. Still, I don't know because of the contract. Here's what's worrying me. Can I tell you my problem?
Yeah.
This guy had a contract. He owes this guy money. He owes this guy money for using this field. That's it. That should be it, I think. Like, I don't quite see why a shomer sachar is, is that an analogous case? I have a question. Can you think of something close to this in a different context? What is the closest halachic analog to this that might shed some light on it?
It depends how exactly you understand the rule. But I think that this is, to take Gabe's earlier distinction between viewing Makas Medina as a modifier of a previous rule or just an application of an earlier rule, couldn't this just be an application of, like, look, it's mazel shel shnehem garam.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Right?
I just don't see that because of the contract issue. Like, let me put it this way. If there's a shutfus, if it's a partnership and there's a plague, they both bear equal, but they bear the loss equally because they're equal part owners. But a lease agreement is not joint ownership. It's an exchange.
Right. And I think I think a nice way of putting it, Cole, is that with respect to the loss, they're partners, right? There's you can think of it as there's no principled
why?
Reason.
Because one of them doesn't get his field back at the end of it, or
no,
his field is damaged.
Because there's no principled reason to allocate the loss from based on some other principle. So the principal distribution here is to view them as partners in the loss.
Let me ask you something. Why should Makas Medina change anything? If there was no Makas Medina, this guy would have worked the field as he wanted to, and every month he would have sent a check to the Baal Habayis. Why should I care that the field is now in flames? Like, I mean, what the halacha might have said is, like, you have to pay the guy $25 every month, just like you were going to have to before there was a giant tornado. And then afterwards, this guy gets back a wrecked field.
Right.
But that's loss allocation for you.
Right.
I mean, do nothing is always an option. The question is why we don't do nothing.
So I think this gets back to maybe something Gabe was saying. So in secular law, you'd say that, let's see, bye, Adam. We'll see you on Thursday, Adam. In secular law, you'd say that there's something like impossibility or frustration of purpose. Like when the very purpose for this agreement is no longer relevant, both parties get discharged from the contractual duties, right? It's like, if the very purpose for this agreement no longer exists, you can't be held to the obligations that...
Okay. Did you say that before? That's the first time we're saying this, isn't it?
Yeah. Because, you know, the halacha, you don't really find
that's
that...
That's what I was asking for. That's brilliant. That's perfect. That's fine.
Yeah.
I find that persuasive.
Exactly.
Frustrated purpose. It's no longer... The agreement was made for a world... Yeah. See? Everything, all my problems have gone away. No, seriously.
Yeah, no, I agree. I could send I mean, you should read those chapters in the contract book that I sent. That chapter in the contract book I sent out a while ago.
In Charlie Fried's book?
No, it's not Fried's book on contracts. This is like a shorter summary. This was Churlstein, I think. But yeah, I mean, the doctrine is that, like, if the purpose is frustrated, then the contractual duties are suspended. Now, the reason why we haven't seen it until now is because the halakha didn't really appeal to that principle until now, right? But I think this would, if that principle is tacitly being assumed here, that should explain why we don't care about the, you know, what other arrangements would exist under the agreement when it's suspended by Makas Medina. Cole?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Right. So then suspend the contractual obligations and say now we just view them as partners in the loss.
Right.
All right, I think we went... There's a little more to discuss in this Ravan and in the Shit Maram. That's a variation on this Ravan. I think we went long enough today, right? We're already over an hour and a half. So how about this? We'll talk a little bit more about this really important Ravan and the way the Maram quotes this Ravan, and we'll look at some of the Achronim on the Sugya, and that'll really be the end. So we're going to have two more Chaburas. We'll do Thursday and Tuesday, and then we'll have a big CM party. All right, everyone? All right, Yasher Koach. We'll pick up again on
Thursday.
Mark,
can you send me the PDF of that thing you were going to send me?
Yeah, I'll send you that. Oh, the PhD or the chapter?
Yeah, the former.
Okay, excellent. All right, yes, I'll send it to you. Take care, everyone.